once in a while, we've got to make a game day decision to make an adjustment to the schedule, and we've had to do that today. So we were planning on having a conversation today with two NHL hockey players. Kevin Kaminsky and Matthew Barnaby were actually going to be our noon guests. We have moved them till tomorrow at noon. So they were tomorrow, I think, at 11:30. So we will still be chatting with those two NHL superstars. We just won't have them on today because Premier Scott Moe has called a news conference. That is happening at noon today. He wishes to address the new canola seed tariffs that China has imposed on Canadian canola seed, a 76% tariff that just was announced this morning. This obviously is news that's deeply concerning to our province and our premier. So we will be hearing from him at noon today. So for those of you who are pumped up and excited for the hockey players, Kevin Kaminsky, Matthew Barnaby will join us tomorrow morning closer to lunch on the show. And of course, the reason we're having them on is that big Delisle sports dinner is happening on Friday of this week. I'm so excited. It's such a great event. I've been there as a spectator, as a participant in past years. This year, I'm excited to be MC for the night, and so getting a bit of a sneak peek with these two hockey players on the show tomorrow. So looking forward to that. Well, Canada's military has been a topic of conversation a lot, and I'm going to say for good reason. While Canada's military over the last number of years has been woefully underfunded, the reason I say good reason recently is we've seen a stepped up, an increased commitment to not only the resources, the women and men that work in the military, the human resources, but also the equipment, whether it's submarines, fighter jets. We've talked about an Arctic base to protect the northern part of our country. All of these things have been very important pieces of conversation because we know we've got aging equipment. We know we need to increase our footprint, especially in the north. And we know we need, if you know someone in the military, you know that we need to do a better job of taking care of our military personnel. They are woefully underfunded from a compensation standpoint. You do not get rich in the military, and even the pension plans could use some work. So the recent announcement by Prime Minister Mark Carney was seen by many as a real positive step. Who better to break this down for us and to talk a little bit about the impact that this could and will have than our friend General Rick Hillier, the former Canadian Chief of Defense Staff. General Hillier joins us by phone this morning. General, thanks for taking our call.
Kevin, my pleasure. Thank you.
So this increase in how much compensation is going towards military personnel, and I said especially frontline military, to me, I thought this was very welcome. Your thoughts on that?
Well, look, Kevin, I've been saying for a while now that Prime Minister Carney is going to need some action. Enough with the words. We've had a decade of that. We've all had enough words and no action, and now we need the deeds. And in this case, and I talked to a bunch of young soldiers, sailors, aviators, and, you know, they're saying, well, actually, the government finally did what it said it was going to do and brought in that pay raise with some pieces of it that are separate from the pay raise, but that will hopefully help retention. I think it's a really good move. I think it's overdue, and I think it is going to support the men and women in uniform and their families who serve our nation. It is going to boost their morale, and it is going to assist in retention. It's not going to cure it. It's not going to sort of be as Yogi Berra used to say, it's not going to be a pancreas for everything, but it is going to be a boost for retention, and I think it's long overdue. I was delighted to see it. You know, there is the whole thing. There is only one sort of important pillar of the armed forces, and that's people. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything without people, and people are attracted by, in part, the wage and benefits packages, and they stay in the military in part because of those wage and benefits packages and the support for them and their families. And I think this is a really good indicator that the Prime Minister is doing what he said he was going to do, and it is the perfect way to spend the first portion of that huge increase that he has been announcing in defense and security spending in Canada. I love it.
So you talked about retention, and I can see that making a difference. Do you think it makes a difference from a recruiting standpoint as well, General?
Yes, I do. You can't offer young kids coming off the street $40,000 or something like this and say, okay, you know, you're a young married man or a young married woman, and you come into the military, and this is what we're going to pay you, and expect them to flood to join us when they have many other options which pay a lot better. And on something like that, they couldn't afford to support a family at all, whether it's just a husband and wife or two partners or somebody with children. And so I think it will now increase the people who are interested in Canadian Forces or who perhaps were interested prior but then decided to look elsewhere because they just couldn't see themselves being able to live on the kind of salaries being offered. And so particularly for the more junior ranks, when people join, whether it's young officers or young officer candidates or young soldiers and sailors and aviators, I think it will be an attraction, and I think it will support us getting the people in uniform, ready to do the jobs that this country needs them to do. So, yeah, I do think it will be an attraction for recruiting and help us increase and fill all the ratios and fill the quotas of people that we need to keep the armed forces operational.
As I was putting together my prep to speak with General Rick Hillier, who is our guest, I actually started this before Mark Carney had made the announcement of the increase, the pay raise increase. And the question that I had written is, where do we start? So we've made the decision, we've put aside some budget, where this is how much money we're going to spend on defense. I said, where do we start? You just finished saying, this is a great place. Let's start with the people. But we're talking fighter jets, we're talking submarines, we're talking Arctic military bases. Is it all of the above, General, or where would you start?
Well, there are sort of two parallel approaches that I would take here. The second parallel approach, not the first, the second parallel approach is the fact that I would start with contracts that are already prepared to go to contract and to start buying stuff for the Canadian Forces. And I can't give you specific examples, but whether it's drones or whether it's trucks or any of those things or small boats for our special forces or training or any of those things like accelerate the signing of the contracts. And one thing I would say overall is put a two-year timer on contracts. From the time we identify the requirement till a contract is signed with delivery starting, 2 years. And that will put a sense of urgency into our procurement system that we have been lacking. But accelerate those contracts which are in place right now, enlarge contracts which are already delivering, but we need more of them. And let's go again with trucks, for example, because you can't do any operations without that logistical capability, that recovery capability, which comes in the form of vehicles. So, hey, accelerate contracts which are being prepared and expand contracts which are already in place. And then, again, put a two-year time limit on contracts which you've been looking at for things that we need. That's parallel track number one, to spend money quickly in places where you actually need it. But the most important thing of all is put in priority, where you need most support. And here's what I would say. Yeah, aircraft, fighter aircraft, helicopters are important. Submarines are usually important. But look, let's start with the Army. The Army is broken. And the Army needs everything. We need long-range precision fires. We need new direct fire vehicles. Let's call that a tank. We need new fighting vehicles in huge numbers, not just for the regular force, but also for the reserve. We need counter drone systems, and we need drones in the hundreds and thousands that our troops can use when engaged in any kind of operation, whether it's in Latvia or whether should everything go, to hell in a handbasket, whether it's against Russians that would be trying to take over Eastern Europe or anything else. Start with the Army. The Army needs everything, starting with people, needs all that equipment. And then go from there. I think the number one thing that we would want to go to is the Arctic. I mean, we've got this massive piece of our great nation. It is, under threat in a variety of ways, not necessarily the traditional military threats of troops going to invade it, but as the ice recedes and the waterways open, nations like China are going to be using it. and what's to stop them from establishing, you know, a small port in areas that we claim as our own? The Russians are already building bases across there. We need to pay attention to the Arctic. We need to invest in it in a huge way, along with the United States of America, because of NORAD and what we do with our friends and allies to the south. And that means investing in the Arctic means infrastructure. We need to have, you know, three main projection bases. I don't know, Nunavut, you know, Iqaluit, and Yellowknife. We need to have pre-positioned equipment for primarily Army troops forward in, you know, 5 or 10 locations. We need about 30 airfields that are brought up to code and to speed, and we need those with hard surfaces on them. Doesn't have to be asphalt. We got all kinds of technology out there. And then we need to have troops that can go in. We need to increase the Rangers, that program, because they're our eyes and ears and our experts and experienced individuals on the land, of course, from our First Nations in the north. And we need to do all of that. And you put over the top of that a satellite system which looks into the Arctic and can see and give you real-time observation and communications. You add to that a mid-level drone capability that can go out and stay a long period of time. And then you had the response and increase the response from the Air Force and the Navy when you can actually do that. Second, so after the Army, secondly, would be the Arctic. And then it's the submarines. We do need the submarines just to stay in the submarine community, just to be aware of what's happening in the Arctic waters around our coast and off our coast, and just to be a part of that small but very elite club, and then be able to use those submarines in a variety of missions around the world. We have two strategic weapons in the Canadian Forces. One is our Special Forces, which we never hear about when they're on operations. And the second one is the submarines. And we can use those in a variety of ways for Canada. And we're going to need to replace very quickly the four that we have. We need to do it with a fleet that's new, that's modern, and that's much, much bigger in number. I believe that 12 is the fundamental number we'll need to go to. And we need to do that soon. So I would say, Army, let's fix the Army.
Yeah.
Let's invest in our Arctic and submarines.
I love that you just operationalized a plan right here live on the radio with us, General Hillier. We appreciate that. There was a text I got earlier from a listener, John, in Ituna, wondering, when I had you on the program, if you could share your thoughts. Do we have a capacity, knowing that we're looking to grow our defense generally here in the country, do we have a capacity to invest, design, and produce equipment here, whether it's military jets? Could we become a more advanced military country by doing some of that work here? Do we have the capacity?
Yes, we do. We're going to need, number one, government commitment to those companies, to that part of our economy. We're going to need a revolution in the procurement process, a procurement process that takes 10 years to do a major crown project, i.e. anything over $100 million, and everything these days is more than $100 million. A procurement process of more than 10 years to deliver something like that is simply not workable, and the companies that can do those kinds of things, you know, and found alternative customers, whether it's the United States of America or whether it's in Europe, et cetera. There are certain things we are never going to produce again. We just don't have the scale and scope and the market for it. Fighter jets is one thing. I mean, the price of doing a fighter jet as a lone country is simply not there. But we can be part of programs. And whether it is the F-35, which we kind of, you know, peed away a little bit here over the last decade and a half, great opportunity to be part of the development of that aircraft and then the maintenance of that, you know, 3,500 aircraft fleet around the world for the next 40 years. That's the kind of thing we can really be part of. We have awesome companies. They make fighting vehicles in, you know, London, Ontario, which are second to none. We have drone companies. We have our ammunition companies. They need commitment from the government. They need a revolution in the procurement process in Canada. And they need the support of government with that commitment to be able to go and market around the world. I mean, I go to defense shows in Abu Dhabi and in London, England now coming up very soon, and in Paris and in Riyadh. And every other country is there, industry, military, and government all linked, marketing their products. You go to the UAE at Abu Dhabi, and France is there. The French government, the Minister of Defense is there, and their military senior commanders are there, and their industry, and they're all working as one to get that business for France, to build their relationships with other countries, and to provide the jobs for their French citizens. We need to do the same. We have fought that for the last 25 years, and we need to change our attitude because every other country is doing it, and they'll eat our lunch. So, yes, we have the capacity, but there are certain things that we need to do. And I simply say, look, a revolution in the procurement process and how we look at defense and security.
General Hillier, we're pretty much out of time, and I did have one question left that I was hoping to ask. We had a couple of members of the Canadian Armed Forces linked to that militia arrest that was made in Quebec about a month ago. There was another story in Global News last night that extremist views is a problem in parts of the Canadian Armed Forces. Is this just a reflection of some of these extremist views in society, or is there a problem? Is there need for more vetting in the Canadian Armed Forces to prevent these types of extremists from getting in?
Well, first of all, I don't think you could ever uncover every single extremist and the views that many of them perhaps could hold, but hold secretly. And so here's what I would say. I think it's a problem of society, if you will, that people are like that and have those extremist views. But I think Canadians should take great comfort that we actually have uncovered those kind of individuals who have those extreme views. We have deemed it unacceptable, and action is being taken by the chain of command to make sure that they are not going to remain part of the Canadian Forces. They are not going to be able to affect that great image that we have of men and women who want to serve their nation. And I think we should give credit to the commanders of the Canadian Forces. We should make sure that they continue to have the powers under military law to be able to do that. And we should take great comfort in it and look at it. The numbers are so tiny, and yet we hear about it because it's a big negative thing, right?
Right.
And what we're not hearing about at the same time are the 99.9% who are the most awesome Canadians that you would ever meet and who would serve all of us right to giving up their life if necessary.
Well, General, I appreciate your time as always. Thanks for carving out some time for a chat today.
Pleasure to do it, Evan. Thank you.
Thanks again to General Rick Hillier for his time. Here's the question. With the renewed investment in the Canadian military, we've seen that now the federal government spending billions of dollars to meet that NATO goal of 5% military spending. Do you think Canada should seek to retain its status as a solid military partner, as a peacekeeper? Or is this about forging a new, stronger military role in the geopolitical scene? We'll open up the phone and text lines for you. I'm curious, does Canada's military role change with this renewed investment, or just basically live up to the reputation that we've had up until recent history? That's the conversation we have with you next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.